On To The Point, we try to make sense of the policy debates and the political sideshows on the campaign trail.
Ted Cruz wrapping the bacon around the semi-automatic weapon to cook it.
I understand that trade is not a sexy issue.
Nobody knows where the Republican Party is going to land. I mean, it's kind of like a country road. No one knows where it will end.
In many ways, Marco Rubio is the Michael Jordan of American politics.
I'm Warren Olney. To The Point has you covered for the 2016 campaign. Find the To The Point podcast on KCRW's iTunes page.
From KCRW Santa Monica and KCRW.com, it's The Treatment.
Welcome to the stage, two-time Academy Award nominee, Saoirse Ronan. So let me ask you about the way you hear voices, because even as a kid, you've obviously had an ear not only for voices, but for speaking rhythms, because Americans sound very different, not only from the way our accents, if you pardon the expression, but the way we talk. Where does that come from for you?
Well, I think just when you're exposed to it, you know, I was born in the Bronx, obviously.
Clearly. The South Bronx, based on your accent, clearly.
South Bronx, yeah. It was actually the West Bronx, but whatever.
Forgive my imprecision,
of course. If you want to be specific about it.
I did.
Very, very different to the South Bronx. But yeah, so I was there till I was about 3 and a half, and I grew up listening to American accents and watched American TV and American films. And I think my dad, who kind of by chance became an actor in New York, he was a bartender and got asked to audition for a Hugh Leonard play called Da.
Oh, and my God, he was in Da?
Yeah.
Wow.
He was, yeah. It was an Irish actor called Chris O'Neill who asked him to audition. Do you know Chris? Have you heard
of him? Yeah. Oh, wow.
And so, yeah, they would go into him. They worked in the Irish Arts Centre in the Irish Rep, and they would go into his pub that he worked in after a performance. And my dad's very, very funny and very quick and was always like a real character, you know. I think it's just a sort of natural talent that the Irish have to do accents. Whenever we're messing about or telling a story or something like that, we always use accents. So I grew up doing that. Like, that was sort of how we communicated. You'd talk about someone and, you know, you'd put on their voice. So I always grew up doing that, I guess. And the cadence, you know, and the melody of someone's voice, you just kind of, you pick up on it. But when I started actually working with dialect coaches, like, the first one that I worked with was this amazing dialect coach called Jill McCullough, and she's an English dialect coach. And it was on an Amy Heckerling film, and she explained to me sort of
You're playing in the film with Paul Rudd.
And nobody ever got to see it, and it was actually really good.
It's a very odd movie, but I saw it.
Yeah,
that's how I could tell
it's
you
Amy Heckerling.
It. It's basically her life story.
Yeah, kind of, and I'm sort of a version of her daughter and stuff. But anyway, Jill really explained to me, like, the placement of your voice and the American accent sort of back here, and it's kind of flat, and the Irish one is a bit more forward, and we kind of aim to please a little bit more, so we're kind of, do you know what I mean, Scottish is sort of defensive like that. So like every accent really kind of represents the people that you're dealing with.
I can't wait to hear you play a hip-hop artist. But anyway.
Oh, that's next.
Of course it is.
I've talked to the Straight Outta Compton cast already. It's in the works.
Maybe you can help them get Oscar nominations next year.
Yeah, anyway. Let's bloody hope so.
But let me ask you about really the first time you acted. I mean, I just remember seeing you in Atonement. And there's a kind of, I guess I want to say, a kind of gravity that your characters always have, a sort of a wariness about what's going on around them. And I guess I wonder how much of that sort of wariness as you versus the characters you play.
I think because I started off playing characters like that, it probably influenced me as well, I would say, because I've always thought of the characters that I've played as being sort of like friends that you get to know, and you always take something from them, you know, even Hannah. And, you know, you can you can take some. We've got one fan here for Hannah. That's nice. But you always sort of take something from the personality of the person you're sort of trying to portray. But I think, I don't know, I mean, I was lucky that I had parents that communicated with me and talked to me, and I was always surrounded by, you know, actors and directors and people who, you know, just really interacted with me. So I was around a lot of grown-ups, very much encouraged to be a kid, but I think that probably influenced me as well. And it just meant, from Atonement onwards, Atonement was the third film that I had done. I remember I had been offered another film at the same time, and it was this action film. And, you know, I was like a young one who got kidnapped or something, and this guy saves me and brings me back home, whatever. And
was it Taken? No, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I know. It was Liam Neeson. No, but it was that kind of thing. And I knew even then that that wasn't the direction I wanted to go down. I always wanted, you know, to be involved in a story that was interesting. And usually the characters will reflect that, you know.
But did you even as a kid get called an old soul, like a wiser than your years kind of a person? Did you hear that from people?
Yeah, I don't know where why they think that or where it comes from, but yeah, I suppose certain people would say it to me.
It's certainly something that could be said about many of the characters you play. Again, they're kind of watchful people.
Yeah.
And I wonder if that's, again, if that's something that you intuited, that's you, or like you're saying, something you picked up from these people that you played.
I guess it just goes hand in hand. You know, I give something to the character and the character gives something back to me, and it sort of all becomes one eventually, you know. And I think it was the same with Ailish. This was someone who, going into it, I looked at her as, you know, the first Irish young woman that I'll play. Because I had never, as Elva said, I never got to use my own accent, which I was happy about, because, as I said, the accents can really help you to put yourself in a different place when it comes to the person you're playing, you know. But I was ready to do that, and I really, you know, want to make as many great Irish films as possible for as long as I'm allowed to do this. And so I think when Ailish came along initially, that's what I thought she would be to me, and that's what she would represent. And she suddenly became this person who I realised by the time we actually made it was going through exactly what I was going through in my own life. Because there was a space of time in between when I signed on to it to when we actually made it, which was about a year.
How long the space? Okay.
It was about a year. And in that time, I moved away from home and I moved to London.
You told me this when I met you.
Yeah. And so I was very homesick, you know, and I felt exactly what you watch her go through in this. I didn't have a bucket situation. There's no buckets involved with me. But I just want to make that clear. It was all plain sailing in that department. I'm tired, sorry.
You're not sorry.
I'm not sorry. I'm glad I said it. But anyway, that was something that, you know, I was going through emotionally. I felt like we were very much running parallel to each other, and she really, playing her and having to kind of work through an awful lot of stuff, which I had never done before. I had always wanted to play characters that were completely different to me, but this suddenly really helped me to get through the homesickness that I felt.
But did it make you feel more vulnerable? Because she's the kind of character who's, as we see, she's really wrestling with the idea of how much of herself does she expose to the world.
Yeah, I felt very exposed. I felt incredibly vulnerable, and that was a new thing for me, because, you know, you do this because you want to be given, because you are given the opportunity most of the time to let go and to be liberated. And whether you're on stage or you've got a camera in front of you, the most amazing feeling that you get is when you've, you know, sort of found a scene and you can just completely forget about everything and just go for it. And it's wonderful. But I've always sort of been able to manage it, I suppose, when it comes to the emotional side of it. I would play a character and then in between takes I'm back to being myself, or I'd go home and I'd be able to leave it on set at the end of the day. And I wasn't able to do that with this because it was, as I said, it was what I was going through. So there was no escape from it. And then to go back home in the middle of this homesickness that I was feeling and go back to a town that was, you know, 20 minutes away from where I grew up. And it wasn't even a place that was part of my life anymore, but it was my childhood. And I think everyone kind of probably spends the rest of their life grieving for their childhood a little bit. Because it's, well, I feel like I do anyway, up until now. And it's something that I still miss. And this town and that area in Ireland represents that to me. And to suddenly have work and my childhood come together like that was weird. It was really weird. Like, there were people coming up to me, extras who are in the dance hall and the church, who I had played basketball with or gone to sports days with, and they'd come up to me and be like, Saoirse, do you remember me? Do you remember me? Do you remember when we were 8 and we played that basketball match back in Clonegal? Do you remember? And you won. No, I won. I think, you know, and anyway, they'd come up to me with all of these kind of facts about what had happened in the past, and it was weird. It was really weird.
It's so funny, because as you're talking about this, one of the things that I remember too, just watching stuff to get ready for this, you play so many characters who don't get to experience childhood.
Yeah.
I mean, so yeah, to actually get a chance to grieve for your childhood here and to be playing something that's so close to yourself, because a lot of acting, and I've talked to actors who really say this, at some point it's possession. You're not you anymore. And you step off the set and go, wow, how did that happen? But in this case, you're basically in a lot of ways playing yourself.
Yeah, which is so much harder.
Yeah.
Because there's no separation, so there's nothing to hide behind. And I think that's why I've always liked doing accents as well, because it allows you to completely disappear into another person. Like, your voice is such a huge part of who you are and how you communicate with people and how you present yourself and how confident you are and where you come from and all that sort of stuff. And I've always been really fascinated by it. But to suddenly, even though it's a country accent that I have in it, I've got more of a Dublin accent in real life, but it's very scary because you don't have a mask to hide behind anymore. And to then try and fit that into work and like manage that in some way and still be professional and not just be like a blubbering mess every day is hard. I was a basket case half the time.
Yeah, I could get that from here, because it, yeah, also she's kind of a fish out of water, because she's kind, yeah, of a modern character in her way. She's right, a little bit too ahead of her time, which, yeah, must have amplified your own feelings of feeling a little bit out of place and feeling vulnerable and away from things that meant something to you.
It did amplify it, but it also made me feel less alone to play someone else who has gone through that too, because I think it allowed me to see that everyone has gone through a version of that loneliness at some stage or another, and probably will a few times in their life, you know, and I certainly have, and everyone does. So I think that was what I got from the script and from the film more than anything else, and even talking about it during press, is that it made me feel less alone. Like, to get the chance while you're very, very home. And it wasn't just kind of like, oh, I miss the food at home or I miss the telly at home, because I was in London, I was getting the same food and the same telly. But it's your, you know, you see in the scene at Christmas, their roots, our roots, everyone's roots are incredibly important to some of them, to some of us. They're really important to me. And I really missed that when I was away, and I missed being an Irish girl in Ireland. And to get to say lines like that, and at the end of the film to say homesickness, you'll feel so homesick you'll want to die and there's nothing you can do about it apart from endure it, but you will. I felt like I was being given that advice myself by Nick and Colm and Ailish and John, and, you know, it was amazing.
What was the first meeting like with the director when you were talking about doing this? What was that first conversation like?
It was great. I mean, I love John, obviously. He's brilliant, and he makes you feel very safe, and he's a real actor's director. And, you know, I think, of course, it was important that the film looked nice, but stories and characters are what's important for him, and the visuals come after that, which is lovely to be with someone who's isn't more concerned about the aesthetic of a film. Depends on the film. Sometimes that's exciting and you like to get into that place. But for a film like this that's so emotional, to have someone from home as well take that on, who doesn't live at home anymore, and kind of let this be a love letter to what he's gone through and Ireland and what everyone else has kind of gone through as well, regardless of where you come from. That was something that we talked about a lot. And I had said to him I was thinking of moving away from home and I was going to go to London, which is where he lives. So we talked mostly about that, just about this trip that I was about to make. And then the next time I saw him, I had moved and was like, didn't know what the feck I was doing.
Browse the KCRW store and shop for vacations, wine classes, frequent flyer miles, dinners, and merchandise. Shop to support KCRW only at kcrw.com/store.
I'm aware of how she uses her hands. Talk to me about the physical part of this character.
Well, yeah, I think if you're talking about this kind of time period as well, the physical kind of proximity that people had to one another, especially if they were in a relationship or they were courting or whatever, it was very specific. And that was down to John. Like myself and Eileen, who plays Nancy, who's my best friend back at home, who became one of my best mates in real life. She's the best. But when we see each other, we wanted to, you know, hug each other and kiss each other and jump up and down and all that. And we had to restrain it to us just kind of clasping our hands and, you know, keeping it quite tense. And that's something that they would have done. You know, they contained quite a lot. They didn't show an awful lot of emotion.
And that explains why the body's kind of at war with the head a little bit, doesn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. And I think even then the scenes with Eilish and Tony, there's a, in a lovely way, I hope, there's a strain sort of to it, or there's something that they're kind of withholding. Because, of course, they want to just, you know, probably rip each other's clothes off. Give each other a kiss, at least. But they can't, you know, because they have to follow this sort of protocol. And so that starts to come out in them physically as well, I think.
It's interesting, though, having you talk about working with Joe, because I mentioned sort of in a crypto way Hannah in my introduction. And I love that film, and I love that because there's that grave face, but that sort of incredible physical confidence that she has, because she can really do anything, but she can't tell anybody what she can do.
Yeah.
And I feel like your instincts move you more to, as much toward the physical as anything else, don't they?
Yes, because I think with the more physical characters, sometimes great emotion and purpose can come out in a character. So with Hannah, that could easily have been, you know, just a young one who's an action heroine and she pulls a few cool moves and that's it. But there was a lot of drama in that film and there was a lot to play. And, you know, Joe really added that to the story as we went on, and it turned into this weird, like, kind of twisted, demented fairy tale.
Yeah, the scenes out in the woods where she's by herself, that's almost like something out of...
Yeah, they're weird, you know, and all the stuff and the... Even the stuff between myself and Kate, again, it's very strained and there's so much that they keep from one another and it's great to get to play. I mean, I like not talking in films. I like...
Yeah?
Yeah, I do. I love using dialogue as well, but I really enjoy just not talking because I think with film, definitely more so than anything else, you can use silence and it's true, I keep comparing them, which I shouldn't, in theatre as well. Oh. Silence is so powerful, you know, when it's used in the right way, I think. And when you've got a camera right in front of you and you've got a face and you've got eyes, use them, you know. And so I like being able to do that as well. But then I find, you know, as I've gotten older now, I would like to do... I mean, I hopefully now, at the end of this year, I'm going to do a film where it's just basically two characters who talk to each other, you know.
Can you say what it is?
No, I
we
can't.
Won't tell anybody, right?
Don't tell anybody, but... no, I can't.
You were talking about that loneliness, and so many of the characters you played have been in one way or another either lonely or like aching for contact. Do you like playing characters? You seem to have an affinity towards physicalizing loneliness, which is a really interesting thing to do because, as you're saying, so much of it is about not talking. We go to atonement, or certainly Hannah is an action film about suffering, you know, about somebody who's kind of broken trying to rebuild herself. Do you feel like you have an affinity for finding ways to sort of make loneliness something people can see?
Well, I mean, I don't know. That's up to everyone else. But yeah, I suppose I have been drawn to that kind of stuff. I think that's, it's interesting to watch. And I think most of the time we are watching characters who are either kind of against all odds, or they have to face something, or there's a battle, or there's, whether it's within themselves or outwards, you know. People like seeing other people overcome things, whether it's loneliness or something else. So maybe that's why I've been drawn to it. I don't know. It's hard to kind of like break it down, but I do know that right now it's really nice, whatever character I'm playing, to have them actually interact with people. Not have them live in a cave the whole time and mess about with deer carcasses. But I think it's all, you know, you're always changing, and it's in relation to the films that you've done in the past. You know, I don't want to do the same thing twice, or at least for a while. I want to try and do something different every time. And I think, you know, with the different directors you work with, I find more than anyone else, they're the ones that really influence what kind of work I want to do. Like, right before I did Brooklyn, I had done another small film called Stockholm, Pennsylvania, and Nicole Beckwith wrote and directed it. And I know that she's really shaped my taste and kind of just what I want to say a little bit more. And I'd never really thought about female interaction on film as much until I did her film. And of course, Brooklyn is so much about that as well. And it's really important, I think, to see women on screen who aren't at each other's throats, and they're not catty with each other, and they're not bitchy. They're just helping one another, you know? So it'd be nice to see more of that.
Well, let me ask you this, because you said, you talked about not really having a process when you did Atonement. Do you have one now?
I mean, it's different right now. It's very different right now because I'm rehearsing for a play, and that's very, very different.
Can you
different.
Say what the play is?
Yeah, it's The Crucible.
You told me this. That's right. You told me you're doing
ever
The
Crucible. Heard of it?
Yeah, by Hugh Leonard, right?
No pressure. some unknown, like, 20-year-old writer wrote it.
The last time I saw Liam Neeson do The Crucible.
Yeah, like, that was about 10 years ago, I think. Wow, yeah. But I think it's different on every job you take on. Like, with Hannah, you know, the prep for that was going to the gym every day, and the physicality was a huge part of it.
It does something different to your confidence too, doesn't it? Once you get...
Yeah, absolutely, it does. And I need that for that character. I wouldn't necessarily need that for every character. I mean, you know, I always try and learn my lines before.
You always try and learn
try
your
learn
lines,
my line. I always learn my lines.
You might want to do that for The Crucible. Don't talk to me.
I know. It's my biggest nightmare that I'm going to fluff the lines.
Does that scare you, the idea of doing a venerated piece like The Crucible on Broadway?
Yes. Yeah, well, we're working with Ivo van Hove, who's always going to do something different anyway, and he's done a bit of Miller now and has always conceptually made it very different and abstract. So you won't be able to compare it to any other production you've seen anyway. But yeah, I'm terrified. And I think everyone's a bit scared, and that is kind of the lovely thing about it. Like, everything that everyone said to me about the theatre is true, that everyone's scared on the first day. Everyone was scared on our first day.
Yeah?
Yeah, it's scary. You know, you need to get it right. And also, more so than film, when you're doing a film, it's, you know, you'll start and you'll rehearse something and you'll figure it out, and then you'll do the take and you'll find the take that's best, and then you'll move on, and that's the end of that.
Sure.
With theatre, it's not like that. You're constantly thinking about what happened 5 days ago. You're constantly trying to make it better, because you'll have to put the entire piece out every single night. So you're constantly working on it, constantly thinking about it.
But also, though, the big difference is that this now belongs to you, I mean, you get everything from the director, the rehearsals, but once you go out there in front of those people, it belongs to you. There's got to be some real pleasure in that, doesn't there?
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, I haven't done it yet, but yeah, I would imagine.
But you've grown up seeing your dad do that kind of thing. You must have talked with him about that.
Yeah, the idea of it, someone put it really well, an actress I worked with years ago. She said that, you know, with film is like a nice dinner that you'll go to a fancy restaurant and you'll have your, you know, four courses and they're all lovely and you really enjoy them and you're really satisfied. And with theatre, when you do a play, it's like a big roast and it's all just shoved onto one plate and you get it all at the one time. And that's kind of what it feels like. You've got like everything coming at you from all different angles and there's so many different doors that are open and every, like, there's so many possibilities with one line. You can do it in so many different ways, and to be able to change that every night is brilliant, you know.
But also to feel the heat coming off the audience and to feel as, like, I mean, the actors I've talked to especially, you can always tell, it'll feel like it's a great night and I'll go backstage and go, it was bad tonight. Couldn't you feel how bad it was? Like, no, not really. Can you feel it? Can you just feel it wasn't a great audience? But they gave you three standing ovations. They were to everybody. You could just feel when you went out there, they just weren't into it. And that affects us up here. If we're not getting from him, it affects us. And you must be looking forward to that a little bit, right?
I am. I mean, you know, we've only just started, but definitely in the next few weeks, it'll be exciting to do that, yeah.
What's the first thing you remember seeing your dad do on stage?
I've never seen my dad on stage.
You never seen your dad act?
No, because he did theatre in New York and I was only a baby. But I've seen footage of him playing this... Why am I going blank on the play now? He played this guy from Belfast who was obsessed with James Cagney. And have you ever seen Little Voice? You know, a little voice where she thinks that she's like Shirley Bassey or whatever, and she starts to talk like all these different singers that she loves. That's kind of what my dad did in this play, and he would start to talk. He was from like a rough part of Belfast, and he would start to talk like James Cagney, and Dad is like a shite dancer. And he learned how to tap dance for
because
the play.
Cagney did. Yeah.
Because Cagney did. Dad was able to tap dance, and there was a bit in the play, I think it was on at the Public or something like, or maybe it was Irish Arts Centre, I don't know. And there's a bit in the play, apparently, where he jumps up in the air, does the splits, and the lights go out. And Mam always talks to me about that. She says it was amazing to watch and he was amazing in it. So I wish I had seen him on stage. I hope he goes back to stage one day.
Well, maybe you can figure out a way to do something with him.
Maybe.
Let me ask about Sundance, though. That's
okay.
Like a year ago.
Did you just come back from there?
I just got back.
Was it as mental as it was last year?
There's actually snow on the ground this year. And like last year, it was like, as we say in America, 50 degrees.
Yeah.
That first Sunday, I was walking around with no jacket on. It was cold this year.
Okay.
But talk about being there last year with the film.
It was magic. It was mental. Like, it was, you know, there's that one hill that you climb up to get to every single interview that you have to do. And it kind of feels like a music festival for films, doesn't it? Like, everyone's running around from place to place and getting all their free gear and super dry. And
well, we don't all get free gear, but go on.
I didn't get free gear. Jason Isaacs, who I was with for Stockholm, Pennsylvania, he like disappeared one afternoon, came back, and he had all these girls around him who were like Harry Potter fans, these kids who wanted his autograph, and he had like four super dry bags. He was saying like, oh, I'm not doing any of that. And then he comes back with like three or four super dry bags. I didn't get a chance to do that. I had to work.
I'm sorry.
But I publicised Stockholm, and then Brooklyn happened. And Brooklyn is not your typical Sundance film at all. It's not edgy, as you've seen. It's not cool. You know, it's cool in its own way. Thanks.
But it's an emotional.
Yeah, that's what you're supposed to say. No, it is cool. It is edgy.
I think it's emotional, which is better than being.
Of course. But no, not in a bad way. It's just not your typical Sundance film.
You don't sound defensive at all about it, sure.
No, I'm not. But I'm just saying there was no, you know, it wasn't necessarily like the one to watch at Sundance, and we had our screen and. It was amazing. We came out on stage and we got a big standing ovation from the whole crowd, and Fox Searchlight bought us, and they've been great ever since. And it's just been wonderful ever since then.
What was it like watching the movie with that audience? Because they want, you have to prove it to them a little bit, but the film is not, as you were saying, a typical Sundance film. So,
well, I didn't watch it, so.
Can you watch yourself on?
I don't like to at all. I don't get anything out of it, so I don't.
So you
can't
even watch it just to study the performance to see.
No.
Oh my God, that's the fastest you respond to any question.
No.
Why not?
Because it's subjective, isn't it? So like you're watching. It's like when you listen to your voice on a voice recording. You know what I mean? And everyone says the same thing. They're like, "Oh my God, I didn't know I sounded like that." And that's what it's like when you're always American when you listen back, even if you're Irish.
Don't do that accent in the movie, please.
What accent? What do you mean? This is me, but I feel the same, you know, but 10 times worse when I watch myself on screen. I don't get anything out of it. If it kind of like what you were saying about actors when they're on stage, it's all about feeling, like, you know, so if it doesn't feel right, then it doesn't feel right, regardless of how it looks, I think.
Let me ask you this kind of a final question. When did you fall in love with acting? When did you realize this is what you had to do?
It was when I did Atonement.
Yeah?
Yeah, it was. It was the third film that I did, and I remember it was just an amazing experience. It was like a summer camp for 5 weeks in Shropshire, which is in England, kind of on the border of Wales and England. And we were in this gorgeous, stately manor, and it was one of the best summers we had ever had at home, and everyone was amazing. And I remember Kira and I did this scene that got cut out of the film, but we won't talk about that. No, it wasn't right for the story, but I don't know if anyone's seen it in here, but my character has a play that she's going to put on, and she's made this poster for the Trials of Arabella, and it's down in the sort of hallway, and Kira comes in. I think she's just been at the fountain, so I've seen her. Yeah, I've seen them down at the fountain. Anyway, I shouldn't be telling you all this, but she comes out from the garden and she sees me, and I just, because I've seen her with this, you know, man that I love or whatever, all of my hopes are gone and I'm devastated. And so I rip up this poster in front of her and I started to cry, and I had never cried properly in a film before, and it was amazing. It was an amazing feeling to just completely, as I was saying earlier, you know, let yourself go and to have a reason to let yourself go in that way, or to have something that's almost more important than yourself in that moment, which is the film and what's right for the film, and you'll do anything to make it the best it can be. That's an amazing feeling, and so that's what that felt like for me. And so, yeah, and so I just never looked back, really.
It's a great
I
way.
Hate it now, but
No.
I don't.
Of course you don't.
I love it. I love it even more now. And I didn't think I could love it anymore, but
I do.
Can you
believe the reaction to this film in the last year? I mean, since Sundance?
No. I really can't. It's been, you have no idea, like, how much it means to us that everyone's responded, well, everyone for the most part has responded in the way they have. It's just been really special. So thank you for coming to see us.
Oh, please, let's give her a hand.
To catch up on past episodes of The Treatment, go to kcrw.com or listen on your smartphone with KCRW's mobile apps, or subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or if you listen to podcasts. The Treatment is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica.